you know, again, repurposing and sending their staff home to work on those devices. So that was a big challenge. And at the same time, there was the semiconductor shortage globally. So there was not a lot of new equipment being pumped out. So that was interesting and a challenge to navigate, but obviously we all got through. And then 2 years ago, we actually had like our second largest like year in terms of donation, and 1999, so pre-Y2K would have been the second last largest period. And I think a lot of that was just, again, because so many companies were doing COVID purchasing and all this emergency purchasing and procurement. And then so 4 years later, when the you know, the quote unquote life cycle has ended for the business, they were looking to surplus and donate that. So that was a super good year for us in terms of donations. And then it's kind of tapered off these last 2 years into a more like what I would consider like reasonable, like where we weren't like crammed to the rafters, which is a great problem to have, but it's still a problem. Great problem to have when it's just like so busy coming in. And so we were, again, really grateful that we had so many like students coming in to volunteer and to help with that inventory and the processing and learning how to pull all these things apart, because, you know, there's not a lot of place for kids to like get their hands dirty in a computer anymore. So it's good.
Would you say it almost feels like a skill that's like a lost skill in a way?
We actually have... we have a video on our YouTube page, and it looks at four different organizations and how they've used equipment. But in this case, it's a school in Abbotsford. I can't remember the name. Oh, Robert Bateman Secondary. And the computer teacher there gets a lot of equipment from us specifically so kids can do whatever it is that they want to do, like learn how to do on the computer, including like pulling it apart and like, let's break this and now we have to fix it. And the district doesn't provide equipment like for that. It's still a valuable skill to learn that and have that creative process and look at how to reconstitute and rebuild and work, do those work back logistics. And one of the kids, like, he's like, I wanted to create a game server room from like the 1990s so I could play this one particular game. So that was his focus and his mission. And he's not going to do that on new computers. He needs old stuff. And so it's really neat to hear these little projects. But one time I got a nice email from a teacher in Creston, BC, and he was really happy. He sent me this picture. It was like a little plastic Roman Colosseum and a little sports car, and he's like, this is what we made. This is like 2000, in the mid-2000s, right? But this is what we made with the 3D printer that we were able to buy, because we saved so much money using refurbished computers that I was able to go buy this really like more expensive but specialized piece of equipment to really enhance the student learning that way. It wouldn't have been available to them if they'd had to spend all their money on just like computers and monitors and keyboards and mice. Now they got them used and very well refurbished so that they could use them for another 4 years and then get this really neat piece of equipment to go and do mm-hmm. some other learning with.
Yeah, it really opens the door for people to sort of develop and foster those more niche interests as mm-hmm. well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Everyone's a weirdo. We all got our things. So it's great when we can help each other out.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think that is all that I had to ask for our discussion. But if there is anything else you'd like to share about... Actually, there is one other thing. And that had to do with the donors that you have as part of your organization. Who are some of those key organizations or people that are donating to your organization?
Yeah, so like I said, we deliver the Computers for Schools program, or CFS Plus, as it's now known. So we get all of the federal government computer equipment. So that really needs to speak to the quality of assurance and the high standards that we have to deliver in order to receive government equipment. Today, we literally got a donation in from the Department of National Defense. So that's always some really cool stuff. We never know what's coming in on D&D day. But so we get a lot of equipment from the federal government. They are our largest donor. TELUS would be our second largest donor. And they have been with us all 30 years of the program. But we also get a lot of equipment from post-secondary institutions. And at our donor recognition event this year, we recognized Emily Carr. They're a new donor. to us. And so we really appreciate Emily Carr coming on board. And we've had a longstanding relationship with Capilano, with UBC, Douglas College is coming on. So a lot of the local post-secondary institutions are really great supporters of our work. And they really like it because they don't know where their equipment is going. They just know it's coming to us, which is a great cause. But which student it's going to go to, which youth we're going to give it to, and maybe that person will end up going into their institution later because of the skills they learned on a refurbished device.
Wow, so it's very very cyclical.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, I think that is all that I had to ask, but I want to thank you so much for, again, taking the time to speak with me and for the work you do at the BC Tech for Learning Society.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Danny. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Once again, that was my interview with Mary M. Waddington, the executive director of the BC Technology for Learning Society. We are back with Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. And before we get into the next news piece of the hour, I thought I would play another track from another artist. This one has been just dominating the charts here at CJSF. This is none other than Yon. This is off of their album by the name of Wish I Could've, and this track is titled Let It All Go. Hope you enjoy.
Spent a long, long time feeling bad about it all, about the way you couldn't look at me, about the way you said hello, and you wouldn't talk about it, didn't say a single word, couldn't step out of your pain to see me wounded like a bird. I was sinking in your silence, I was crying in small rooms, I was watching you avoid it all by moving on too soon. And I know I'm not the victim, but I let you feel it all, and just like a woman I made myself small. I think I deserve to care. I'm go now. I set myself free. I lay up on the rocks and listen to the sea. I'm not gonna wallow. I don't need to dwell. I crush it all beneath my feet like little shells. And I don't think you've processed, and that's okay. I hope you find a good therapist someday. But it's not my problem. I no longer care. The tide is changing and the wind is in my hair.
And once again, we are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host of the hour. And coming up, we have another piece that I did. This one is about the North Shore Culture Quest, which sort of gamifies the act of exploring the North Shore. And as someone who grew up on the North Shore, there is a lot to explore. So I thought that was really cool. And I got to experience some of that, and hopefully you get a better gist of what this app is about once you listen to this piece. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Are you looking for a quest this summer? Well, the North Shore may just be the place to visit. Recently, North Van Arts, which is the Community Arts Council of North Vancouver, released an app called the North Shore Culture Quest, which serves to gamify exploration of the North Shore's notable sites and locales. To learn more about how this app came to be, as well as how it can be used for questing, we traveled to North Vancouver's Lonsdale Shipyards, where we met with Anna Lynch, the executive director of North Van Arts.
Yeah, so back in 2020, the North Shore Culture Compass, which is a website with an interactive map, was first published. It was a project that had been in the works for a long time beforehand, and basically the map lists cultural points of interest for all of the North Shore, so that's West Vancouver and North Vancouver. And the reason behind creating it is multiple reasons, but one of them is to support having archival collections and research around different cultural hubs and points of significance, like public art and heritage trails. But it can also be used to plan trips, find new events and places to go, and discover new cultural organizations or pieces of art. So really the website itself is twofold. When the website was launched, one of the ways to promote it, because it came out during the COVID-19 pandemic, was to create treasure hunts. And the treasure hunts were originally PDF scavenger hunts created to get people to explore different areas that were listed on the Culture Compass. Since then, we've decided to develop the treasure hunts into its own app, which is our new North Shore Culture Quest app. Which gamifies finding different locations and clues so that you can learn a little bit more about the cultural history and heritage of the North Shore and find some hidden gems along the way.
If you think that the North Shore Culture Quest app has any similarities to other popular virtual game apps that require you to go outside, you wouldn't be the only one.
Internally, we've already been referring it to as a cultural Pokemon Go. Yeah, so it's the same kind of idea, and we're definitely getting quite a lot of downloads, not just from local residents, but from people all across Metro Vancouver who are, you know, coming across to the North Shore for the day and looking for something a little bit different to do. The plan is that we're going to release different quests each month in different locations. So we have neighborhoods listed across the North Shore to help keep it fresh and relevant and give people something to come back to each month.
At the end of our conversation, we asked Anna Lynch if she could explain one of these quests for us.
Yeah, so one of the first quests that we launched last month is called Around the Shipyards, and all the clues, there's 6 clues in and around the shipyards area, so it's great for those who are just coming across on the sea bus or getting down here by one of the local buses. And that one is going to be permanently on the app, so it can be played at any time.
Seeing as how we were already at the Lonsdale Shipyards, we asked Lynch if she would be open to going through the Lonsdale Shipyards culture quest with us. She agreed, and our journey commenced.
So we need to head to the main entrance of the Lonsdale Quay Market, next to Quayside Plaza. Look up. Can you see the 18-meter tall Quay Tower? It was designed so it would be visible from downtown Vancouver. Just opposite on the plaza, we'll find some flagpoles and maybe, if we're lucky, a street performer. How many flagpoles are there? All right, let's go.
So then we walked to the entrance of the Lonsdale Quay Market, where we counted the number of flagpoles that were in front of the building.
Okay. So our flagpoles, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it says, take the last letter of that number for your clue. So the last letter of 5 is E. So E is our letter, and then we submit.
We uncovered a clue in the form of a single letter. We continued to uncover clues throughout the shipyards until we reached our final objective, which required us to locate and take a photograph of a historical site within the shipyards.
Head to the location, open your camera, and line up the image. So for the photo based locations, you'll see a location on the map, but you can also see how far away you are. So right now we're 95 meters away. And it says, you're not close enough yet to take your photo. Head a little closer. It helps put you in the right direction. It also stops people to be able to cheat by doing them at home. So we're 45 meters away, but we're able to take a picture. So let's press take photo to see what I'm looking for. So this is what the original picture was.
At this point in the quest, each task completed has unlocked a new letter. And we're about to find out that once all of these tasks are completed, you're given an incomplete sentence, one that you can now complete with a word formed by the letters you've unlocked.
There we go, we get confetti. And we have the letter G. So now we should have all the letters for our code word. And the clue for that is the Shipyards District is a place, great place to something, to have fun with your friends and family. Let's see, do you have any idea?
I did not have any idea, but thankfully I was provided a hint that made the answer much clearer.
Ah, okay, I think I know it. So, G-A-T-H-E-R, gather.
There you go. Great. So we have completed our first quest.
And with that, our quest was completed. And while there are only a few other quests to complete at the moment, there are over 1,000 points of interest on the Culture Compass map, with new quests coming monthly, according to North Van Arts. For those interested in the North Shore Culture Quest, the app can be found on the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. arts and entertainment, well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts, public affairs, interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures, public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
Once again, that was my segment on the North Shore Culture Quest. Download the app on whatever app store you have if you want to learn more. And coming up next and last is a piece that is from Vancouver Island, specifically the Comox Valley. This piece was made by Heather Watson of both CVox and CHLY, another LJI journalist. And this one is on the Pride festivities going on in the Comox Valley that have been taken on by a new host, a new nonprofit organization in the area. Take a listen.
This is a CHLY and CVox news update. Comox Valley's new organization, Queer Center, is hosting Pride this year, with events spanning the weekend of August 21st to 24th, including the third annual Pride Parade on Saturday, August 23rd. Mika Johnson is vice president of the Queer Center and project lead on the Pride Parade this year. Previously, the event was run by another organization, Queer Culture, and before that, it was an unofficial community-led parade down 5th Street to Lewis Park, with a dance party to wrap the event. Johnson first joined the grassroots gathering 4 years ago when they moved to town.
So it's been really beautiful to see that makeshift Pride 4 years ago turn into a city-sanctioned parade that has many community partners and different businesses that support the Pride Parade to happen.
Johnson says while this is the third official Pride Parade, the history of Pride in Courtney has historically been more underground.
There's always been queer people here and lots of queer things happening, but it seems, from my perception, a lot more on the surface and in your face. And we're here to stay, we're shining bright, and we're organizing and making strong results. Community that people are welcome to join.
This year's Pride events will expand beyond the parade with a focus on visibility and getting people out in community.
I've lived in the Comox Valley for the last 5 years, and since I moved here, I was like, oh, there's like a ton of queer people, but we're all in our little pockets and we're all under our little rocks. But people do come out for Pride, but I'm seeing like, how can we get all these people together to know each other, to have mutual aid, to support each other, to have projects?
Johnson speaks to why it is important to have queer events in the community.
It's really important that queer people have space to celebrate, because queer joy is healing and magic, and to see people being their most fantastic, authentic selves gives other people permission to live their life the loudest and brightest and most lovely that they can be. And if you've never seen that before, then you don't know it exists. And just seeing one queer person existing and loving their life is so healing for everyone. And I see that in youth when I show up in community and I'm like, I love my life and being a weird genderqueer. And youth are like, whoa, you can do that? And then they do. And it's beautiful. So having space for queer community to exist gives permission for everyone else to live their best life. And when we don't have spaces for that, then people are in the dark, alone, unwell, and it does not benefit anyone. And it benefits the entire community, allies, straight people, just every type of person is benefited by people living their best authentic lives.
Johnson says the city of Courtney's support of local Pride events is significant because they are recognizing, uplifting, and supporting a marginalized community, setting a precedent for acceptance rather than hatred.
I think the impact of Pride in the Comox Valley is quite widespread. There's a lot of queer youth here. We have the Foundry. We have lots of queer youth clubs at schools. And we have queer elders that have gone through conversion therapy and have been called slurs and done hate crimes. So I think it's really significant to see queer joy in our world and to uplift that and see that you can have a great, fantastic life being your best self and you don't need to hide yourself. And the kids I work with, they do tell me that they get bullied at school for being queer. So when there's a big city-sanctioned parade to celebrate their queerness, we can say that we love you just the way you are and we want to see you grow and thrive. And that love penetrates into all aspects of the community and lets people be their true authentic selves and lift each other up. And that's just a beautiful form of community healing that I would like to uplift in all areas of my life.
Johnson shares why it is meaningful to them to participate in this work.
It's really significant to me to be organizing the Pride Parade with my friends, because when I was younger, I didn't know any queer adults. And now that I'm a queer adult, all my friends are queer adults. So it's really fantastic to grow into the life that I want to lead and to be a community organizer and organize queer community and have a lot of people show up and be like, yes, this is what we want to do. This is what we're putting our unpaid labor into, because we also believe in it and want it to grow and thrive. And it's so beautiful to see that. And it heals part of my inner child that never saw queer adults to be a queer adult that shows up for community and queer youth and queer elders and people my age and people who are older than me that just came out or just are transitioning. And I can say, you're beautiful and I love you. Please keep coming back. We want to hold you in our space. And that's just so beautiful.
Johnson explains how the new nonprofit and Pride organizer, Queer Center, started in the Comox Valley earlier this year. They say many people shared a vision, then one person moved into town and said, I see there's a dream and we can make it happen. That person, Jojo Yeager, is now the president of Queer Center.
There's lots of queers here. There's lots of people with fantastic ideas of revolutionary community that's based on love and mutual aid and respect. And there's a strong foundation for some kind of awesome community space here. So it's really fantastic to have all these key community figures in the same place at the same time working on the same dream.
Johnson says the goal for Queer Center is to be a physical space with resources to help people meet their needs, whether that be free food, access to housing, or a social space to sit with friends over free coffee.
I'm hoping Queer Center will be a local resource space that flies a pride flag year-round when you're new in town and don't know anyone, and you're like, oh, there's the trans flag. I'm going to go in there. I know it's safe.
They visualize the center as a local info shop for resources and education on allyship, gender, and identity, but also as a space to house offices and art studios for local facilitators and artisans in need of space.
So we're hoping Queer Center can be a local hub where organizers can have their office, have meetings, have the things they need to organize community in a good way, and not just have all the burden of these things fall onto underpaid or volunteer people that often just do so much to build community. So we want to have a foundation of space that provides resources and accommodates people so they can show up and be themselves, have friends, and organize.
When it comes to Pride events this summer, Queer Center is collaborating with various community groups to host a range of celebrations and activities around town from Thursday, August 21st to Sunday, the 24th. Kicking things off with the first event, Johnson will be leading a nature pride walk at Bevan Wetlands.
I do outdoor education, and I'm really excited to talk about nature and how queer nature is, and that being queer is natural.
Other events will include a drop-in for youth at the Foundry and Pulse on the Plaza at the Comox Valley Art Gallery with CV Arts. The parade will take place on Saturday, August 23rd from 12 till 1 p.m., starting in downtown Courtney, marching down 5th Street and over the bridge to Lewis Park for Pride in the Park.
There is a sliding scale for registration fees, and if you can't afford it, email us. We want you in the parade and we want to remove barriers for it. If you're a youth who shows up with a sign, just get in the parade. I'm never going to stop that. And everyone's welcome to watch, to spectate, or to participate.
Johnson says to create a legacy of support and joy, the support of allies is key.
When we have a lot of allies there to support us, then it decreases the opportunity for hatred or bad things to happen, as well as it increases our ability to support queer youth who are the future leaders and organizers of our world. And when we say, look what we've built for you, please continue our legacy, then they'll step into that. And that's similar to the first Pride Parade that happened. That was a riot where people were fighting oppression. Those are my queer ancestors, and I'm working to continue their legacy of supporting queer joy and supporting me as a queer youth, and I would like to continue that. It's extremely important that we set up a good future for future leaders that will be building the world that we'll be living in.
Registration is open for those interested in joining the parade, with full details on the Queer Center website, queercenter.ca. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
This report, in partnership with CVOX, was made possible with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs program, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
We have reached the end of the hour for this episode of Speak Up, but I want to thank you all so much for tuning in this week. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist and host for the hour. Stay tuned, because we have Democracy Now! Coming right your way.
CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.